The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable Supreme Court of Texas are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Please be seated. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket. In the order of their appearance, they are docket number 040916, Baylor University versus Betty A. Coley from McLennan County in the 10th Court of Appeals District, and 040961, Tony Golo Motors, LP, and Brian Garcia versus Neri Chapa from Montgomery County in the 9th Court of Appeals District. Justice Medina is not sitting in that case. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side in these matters, and the court will take a brief recess between arguments. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the arguments should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is now ready to hear argument in 040916, Baylor University versus Betty A. Coley.
May it please the court, Mr. Roy Barrett will present arguments to the petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Roy Barrett. I'm a lawyer from Waco, Greg White, counsel with me here in Griffin State University. This case involves, I believe, both a substantive question and a procedural question. The substantive question is whether or not an employee who has a contract, where the contract does not provide for any specific duties or responsibilities, can resign employment and later sue for constructive discharge, and then have the trial court give some instruction on constructive discharge that is different from the pattern jury charge instruction, which requires that the jury determine that the employer made the working conditions so intolerable that an employee similarly situated would have felt compelled to resign. It is our position that constructive discharge for both an at-will employee and an employee with a contract is the same. There should be no difference. If the employee has contract rights, they arise in contract. Those rights may be that the employee, if they have a contract for a specific job at a specific location with specific duties, and the employer makes a material change in those duties or that position or that responsibility, the employee can refuse to perform. If they're terminated, they can sue for breach of contract. Or they can go to court in equity and ask for an injunction to force the employer to comply with the contract. But if they elect to simply resign and then later sue for constructive discharge, their burden is the same as if they were an at-will employee. Now, they may have somewhat of an easier road to hoe because they have a contract. And the pattern jury charge instruction 107 says that the employer made the working conditions so intolerable that a employee similarly situated would have felt compelled to resign. So if they have a contract, and they can argue that the contract gives them certain rights, and that as that contract person, they would have felt compelled to resign because they weren't allowed to do some of the things they were supposed to do, they may have a better factual argument, but they have no different legal position. The Court of Appeals did not really say what the standard is. They seem to, the closest they get to saying, if an employer makes a material change in the employee's work or duties, that can be a constructive discharge. They cite Wolf Cigar versus Kramer, decided in 1908, 50 years before the doctrine of constructive discharge was developed by federal courts initially and then by state courts in employment-related cases. Wolf Cigar is not a constructive discharge case. It is a contract case. In Wolf Cigar, the employee had a contract that provided a specific position. He was to be the manager of all the cigar stores for that company in that metropolitan area. He was to be located at a certain store, and the contract said what store he would be at. He was to have overall administrative, clerical, bookkeeping, management responsibilities. They took away that job from him, and they said, you go over instead and work in a little side shop in a hotel. It was a one-person shop for the cigar store. They took away his responsibilities and duties. They took away his job title, in effect, as manager. They moved him from the location he had been contracted to be at. What did he do? He refused to do that. They fired him. He sued for breach of contract. That's all Wolf Cigar is. It's a breach of contract.
Is there any policy manual or anything at the university that describes the duties and responsibilities of an assistant professor?
No. There are because those are varied and different. There are policy manuals that talk about academic freedom and the right to academic freedom. There are personnel policies that talk about if you're going to terminate someone's tenure, the procedure that you must follow. But there are no policy manuals that say a specific professor has a specific group of duties.
What if they had assigned her to the cafeteria?
I think she would have had a very good argument that amounts to constructive discharge.
Or breach of contract.
And she would have had a better argument that it's breach of contract. And she could have refused to go to the cafeteria. And if they fired her for not going to the cafeteria, she could have sued for breach of contract. She did not have her contract, which is Exhibit 4 in the exhibits, does not provide any specific duties. It provides that she has a contract for the next academic year at the rank of associate professor. It doesn't even really say in what department. Now, she was an associate professor in library science. Baylor does not have a library science teaching program. It tenures its librarians if they meet certain requirements. She was a tenured librarian. The only change made in her duties were really to change her from being the only librarian at the Armstrong Branding Library, which as you may know is a special collections library in the Browns, from being the only librarian there, which she was for many years when she was hired, to being a research librarian at that same library. By the time those changes were made, two things have basically occurred.
Why do we need constructive discharge? Isn't constructive discharge just another name for prior material breach?
Constructive discharge is not a separate cause of action. It is merely a method of providing the breach element of a breach of contract case.
Right, but that wouldn't that just be the same as asking, did Baylor, who breached first, is it Coley or Coley?
Coley.
Ms. Coley or Baylor? And say a breach is a material violation of the contract.
You're saying, isn't constructive discharge saying who breached first?
Right.
Well, if that's her contention, then that's a contract cause of action. And if she contends that there was a breach of contract, she should sue for breach of contract. If she contends there is a constructive discharge and that, in effect, breached her employment, then she's got to show that whatever was done to her was not just a violation of the contract, but it was something else because she didn't elect to sue under the contract and rely upon the terms and conditions of the contract. If she had, she would have lost in this case because her contract doesn't provide for any specific duties or responsibilities. So what she did is try to go in the back door and say, okay, I'm just going to quit. Now, she quit to get married. She got married. Then she sued us. Then she says, well, you constructively discharged me because you changed my duties and responsibilities, even though I didn't have a contract that called for duties and responsibilities, even though I am not tenured to a specific position. The plaintiff contends in the brief that Dr. Reynolds testified that you're tenured to a position. That is not correct. If you look at the record, he specifically testified you are not tenured in a position. You're tenured in an academic field. But there is no tenure in administrative positions, and there's no tenure in a specific position within the academic field. A university has the right to say to a biology professor who's been teaching graduate students, you're not doing too good at that. We're going to have you teach undergraduates, or we're going to have you do research in biology. Now, can we tell them that you're going to become the cleaner of the bear pit? Probably not. But we can make job assignments and changes. All we did with Betty Coley was change her from being the librarian at Armstrong Browning, because during her tenure, two other people had gone and gotten their master's degrees in library science and were working there.
Counsel,
he divided the duties.
Your position is that there's, part of your position is that there's no cause of action for constructive discharge. It's really just a breach of contract action, right?
Well, I believe there is a cause of action for constructive discharge that is different from breach of contract, and that the constructive, you have to have some right to the employment. It may be a right that you have not to be terminated because you're a whistleblower. are not to be terminated because of race or gender or other protected issues. It's broader than just contract. So constructive termination, constructive discharge supplies the termination element of any claim in which you have some right to continue to perform. The contract may be one of them. But when you are relying...
Let me make sure I understand you.
Yes,
you just slow you down just a little bit.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. In the common law area, constructive discharge is a means of breaching a contract. Would you say that's an accurate statement of your position?
It is a means of showing a wrongful termination, whether it's a breach of contract or a termination for other illegal reasons.
Do you think in this case that the charge submitted a cause of action in the first question? There are two claims, I think, intended to be submitted. Intentional infliction of emotional distress, the second one. The first one was framed in terms of constructive discharge, not breach of contract, not wrongful termination. Was there a valid cause of action submitted in that first claim, that first couple of questions?
Yes, on the second intentional infliction, the jury found against the final plaintiff.
I understand.
On the other theory, the plaintiff sort of says, I am both suing for breach of contract and I'm suing under constructive discharge. You don't have separate claims in this context. She had to show a constructive discharge to have a breach of contract because she had.
I understand the arguments of the parties. My question is, do you think a valid cause of action was submitted in question one?
Yes.
And it is what? How would you denominate that cause of action? What's it called?
It would be a cause of action for breach of contract in her case. It was undisputed in this case that she had a contract. It was undisputed in this case that she was not actually terminated.
Has this court ever recognized the doctrine of constructive discharge? This court?
I cannot.
The Fifth Circuit in 1993 said we had not.
I cannot find a case where this court has defined constructive discharge. I found three courts of appeals cases and five Fifth Circuit cases.
And the first question reads, did Baylor University constructively discharge Betty Cooley? What cause of action is that again?
In this case, it was undisputed that she had a contract.
I don't want to know how it's viewed or what the party's arguments were. Just looking at the first question of the charge, was a recognized cause of action submitted, in your opinion?
If we constructively discharge Betty Cooley, we breached her contract. The ultimate issue.
So you think question one is a question asking whether the contract in this case was breached?
That's right. It is the ultimate question on whether a contract was breached. There was no dispute that she had a contract. There was no dispute that she was not actually discharged. She alleged she was constructively discharged. So the court didn't need to submit a question that says, was there a breach of contract, and then define how a breach in different ways could occur. The ultimate question was she constructively discharged? If she was constructively discharged, there was a breach of her employment contract. But her constructive discharge theory would be based upon whether or not we made the working conditions so intolerable that a reasonable person, similarly situated, would have resigned. That's what constructive discharge has been held to be by every court that has addressed it, even though this court is not.
Is any material breach in the contract a constructive discharge?
No.
Then constructive discharge and breach of contract are not the same, then, are they?
Not always.
But question one only asks about constructive discharge. You said that is the same as a breach of contract.
She did not have any evidence that Baylor actually discharged. She did not have any evidence that Baylor committed any other breach of contract that would get. The only damages she sued for were lost wages and lost employment.
So in this case, they're the same. Constructive discharge and breach of contract, in your opinion.
The only damages she sought were lost wages and lost employment benefits, so she had to show a breach of her employment contract. She had no evidence and no pleading of actual discharge, so her only available theory was constructive discharge. If the jury found constructive discharge, that would be a breach of contract.
If question one asked, did Baylor University breach its contract with Betty Cooley, would that have been an okay submission, in your opinion?
If you then went forward with an instruction that said, in this case, you will consider whether or not Baylor constructively terminated her or discharged her because there was no evidence of actual. You see, you can't have a general question without an instruction.
Let me go back to my question again. Without any instructions, only with the submission, did Baylor University breach its contract with Betty Cooley? Would that have been a valid submission of the cause, the claim?
Because she had a whole litany of things that she claimed that we did to her, that we made her come in the afternoon and stay till 5. There were a whole litany of things she said we did. Most of those things would not have deprived her of employment benefits, of salary and employment benefits. Her cause of action was for lost salary and employment benefits for a 4-year period. In order to recover that damages, she had to prove a breach of her right to continued employment. She had no evidence of an actual discharge, so she had to prove constructive discharge. That was all that she had pled and all the evidence that she had. So the ultimate issue in this case was not did she have a contract with Baylor, or not was there some immaterial minor breach of the contract, but was there a breach of the contract which destroyed her right to continue employment and to allow her to repair the damages she suffered.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barrett. The court is now ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court. Ms. Linnell McNamara will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court and opposing counsel. I believe that the issue here is an academic contract. It was an academic tenure contract. She received tenure in her specialty. This was a special library. It was not a general library. It was the Armstrong Browning Library at Baylor University. She received tenure because her research and academic publications were on the Brownings or related family members of the Brownings. She became an expert in that field, and when she got tenure, she progressed to where she was participating in conferences, preparing for conferences, giving tours, helping scholars of the library on this particular academic field, which was the Armstrong and the Brownings, Elizabeth Barrett Browning and the other Brown.
But that's not specified in her contract.
She had a list of job duties and responsibilities ancillary to her position in that library. I'm getting to the point where in 1993, she was the first librarian on the Baylor campus to ever be granted a 9-month sabbatical for purposes of research on the ground when she was going to be traveling to England. Now, there was a new supervisor in the Armstrong Browning Library who was appointed to the English department, but she was the only librarian in the Armstrong Browning Library. And I believe that Mr. Barrett misstated that there were two other clerical staff who were doing library studies on a part-time basis, just as she had done.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, obviously, you say there was a contract, and do you agree that she was not fired from her position?
I am saying that she was de facto terminated.
Well, I know that, but I mean, she was not affirmatively fired. Okay. So the question then is whether she was, there was some explanation for why she resigned. She did resign.
Yes. And I can tell you why.
Right. I mean, the way that the issue was submitted to the jury, what is it about that that doesn't allow you to make your case, or didn't make your case to the jury on the reasons why she resigned?
Well, what I was going to say was there are two ways of looking at a contract as been noticed before, which is somebody breaches the contract and somebody, the non-breaching party, then has the right to sue on the contract. They don't have to be terminated. You don't have to terminate.
First material breach, then the other party's no longer bound. The other party can ignore the contract, whatever they want to do. But what, you wanted to submit it twice. Was it a breach of contract? Was there constructive discharge? What's the difference?
I did not want to commit to.
I thought your proposed charge had question number one, was there a material breach? Question number two, was there a constructive discharge?
I did those alternatively, not the same.
So the trial judge gave you one. My question again is, what's the difference? If there's no difference, then you're not entitled to have the same question submitted twice.
No, I'm not.
So what's the difference?
The difference is that in this case, there was a material breach by Baylor because she was removed de facto from her position.
Right.
She gave keys to...
You're telling me the facts. I want to know the difference in the legal theories. For breach of contract, you have to prove that they materially breached first. As I understand constructive discharge from your brief, you would have to prove that they materially changed the breached the contract first, which sounds like exactly the same thing.
In the case of constructive discharge, the history of the constructive discharge concept came out of discrimination law. That was the definition under discrimination law. It is now being applied, in this case, to contract law. An employee at will who has no contract can file a suit for constructive discharge. Now, can
Let's stop right there.
Okay.
Let's say I've got an employee. I don't breach any race, you know, federal or state discriminatory laws. But I just am a difficult person to work for. They give me work and I throw it over in the trash can and do everything my own self. So I make their job intolerable because I'm not using them. How have I breached the contract? Why should we worry about if they quit, they get to sue me?
Well, if they're an employee at will and they quit, they can't sue you.
But
because they have no contract.
You just said employees at will could for constructive discharges.
No, not for it is a different definition. A breach of contract is a breach of a term or condition of a contract. She was the Armstrong Browning librarian. That is all she had been. She did her research there. She was while she was on sabbatical.
You argued all that in the final arguments
right.
to the jury, and the jury said no. So the question is, what was unfair about this submission that we shouldn't take no as meaning no?
Well, an employee at will, okay, an employee at will has a higher burden to prove that they were treated maliciously, abused, discriminated against, retaliation, whatever, you know, because they have no contract. There are statutes and there are federal laws that are enacted to protect employees at will from certain things. And that is where the concept of constructive discharge arose. Contract law has always, to me, been if you have a written contract for anything, whether it's to build a house or to provide the services to the university that the university has hired you to do, then and the university breaches its contract, then the other party is allowed to dishonor that contract. And they're saying that she didn't breach, that they didn't breach the contract. But Baylor restated without her notice, without her agreement, without anything. She didn't get her job description until after the contracts were let out that year. Were given out that year. She got her job description. And she couldn't do research. She couldn't go to England and study something. She couldn't participate on boards. And the other two people, although she was called...
But she got the same salary.
She got the same salary.
So what are we going to look like if we say this is intolerable? You get paid exactly the same amount, but you don't have to do any work. How many employees are going to say, that's just intolerable?
Well, to me, it's no different than a contractor, having grown up in a contractor family. You know, you've been on the contract, and the other party interferes with your ability to do that contract. And so they have breached that contract because of their interference.
What's the interference? I mean, she had a contract. She's getting paid the same wages. She just has a little less prestige in her assignments.
Well, she has no prestige in her assignments. She cannot have access to the materials in the library. So, you know, they had her cutting out newspaper articles and putting them in a scrapbook, like an elementary school child. But anyway, getting back to this analogy, if they interfere with your ability to perform the contract, then you may walk away from it and still get your problem.
Ms. McNamara, you're... two suggested or requested special interrogatories. The first one goes to breach of contract, apparently, and you ask, did Baylor breach their contract, including its contractual agreement that Ms. Coley could continue in her tenured position unless it was determined she was unfit to continue? Now, did Baylor contest that she had, did Baylor contest that she had a tenured position by contract?
Yes, she had a tenured.
No, but my question was, did Baylor take a different position? Did they say she did not have a tenured position, but rather she simply had tenure?
Well, there has to be a tenured position.
My question was, did Baylor say she did not have tenure in this position as an Armstrong Browning librarian? Did they say she doesn't have that tenured position? She just has tenure.
Well, she may have tenure, but she's not. She doesn't. Her area of expertise had been and always had been the Brownings.
Okay,
and that library.
And I understand that's her position. Did Baylor offer any evidence that she was not tenured in that position? Was it their position? Did they offer evidence that she was not tenured in a specific position?
They did argue that, but...
What, was there any evidence of that?
No.
Okay.
But there was evidence that the president did state that you would have the same position once you got tenure. You had the same rights and responsibilities and the same in your tenured position that you held at the time you were tenured. Now, that's what he said. That was Dr. Reynolds, and his information is in the record.
You said the contract did include specific duties, specific responsibilities in the
yes.
four corners of the contract itself?
They have appointment letters, and then they have policies and procedures, which are kept in different departments as to your job description. And it incorporates the job descriptions and the personnel policies and procedures.
The contract, by reference, incorporates those other sources?
The policies and procedures of Baylor. Yes, it does specifically say that. And it also says that Baylor, you know, incorporates it by reference into their contracts, and people sign them, and it says that they're incorporated there.
Those laid out specific, particular duties and tasks and responsibilities for this position.
And when she came back after her sabbatical, she got a different title. That's the other thing. You see, the Wolf Cigar Man got a different title. And she got different duties and responsibilities. She could not stay after 5 to do work. She could not come in before 8. She could not go to meetings on campus during her work hours. She was a clerical staff member in the Armstrong Brown Library. And at the end of that year, after she got her job description in October, at the end of that year, she resigned. At the end of the spring. She was supposed to get a performance evaluation in March. She never got it, and she resigned in June. And that's my presentation of that, or response to their presentation of that issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
Please, the court, with regard to the issue of whether Bader contested the whether there was a position to which she was tenured, I would refer the court, and I know the court is already familiar, with volume 5 of the record, page 45, and pages 34 through 40. And specifically, when Dr. Reynolds, president of Bader University, was asked by Ms. McNamara, but tenure is an entitlement to a position that you had at the time you were tenured. Answer, well, when you say position, you're talking about the individual having certain kinds of responsibilities in their field. Question, correct. Answer, but to a particular position per se, no, it would not.
Or she felt she testified differently, right?
Yes, and but that jury was a contested issue of fact. And
so the jury should decide that. I'm still looking at question one on the submission here. Question was submitted. The jury had to find the conditions were so intolerable it would have felt compelled to decide. That's a higher standard than a material breach. And I mean, a material breach would be lower than an intolerable breach.
That's correct.
So, but wouldn't she be entitled to win for a material breach? Yes. And if so, if the evidence, if a jury could have found on this evidence that there was a material breach but it wasn't intolerable, shouldn't she have been entitled to have the lower standard submitted?
No, sir.
Why not?
Because she did not have evidence of an actual discharge. She elected to resign.
But again,
now, when your question about
my question is, if you materially breach my contract, like if you don't pay me and then I quit,
right,
then who breached first? You did.
Yes.
You say, oh, but it's not a defense then to say, yeah, but you quit, because the question is who breached first. So if she says you all materially breached first, isn't she entitled to submission of that rather than a higher standard of did you all intolerably breach first?
If she had evidence to support it, well, she did not. Let me come back to that 1 second. Justice Johnson, the instructions and the issue, the questions submitted, are defective because they assume that she was tenured in a position and because they assume that she could not be moved out of that tenure without a hearing before the tenure committee. And it was a contested question of fact before the jury whether you were tenured in a position. She said you were. The president of the university said you were not.
Did anyone other than president of the university address that issue?
Nobody but the plaintiff, who said you are, and the president of the university, who is head of the tenure process, said you're not. And the tenure policies do not say that you're tenured. It says you're tenured in a field, but not in a certain position to teach graduate biology. You're not tenured in that. You're tenured in biology.
In her proposed question number 2, she references her tenured position as Armstrong Browning librarian.
That's right. And so, we can move librarians from one position to another. Mrs. Coley testified that Baylor was justified in moving its chief librarian from being chief librarian to just being a librarian because the library faculty didn't like him and complained about him. So she testified in her own testimony that Baylor was totally justified in moving its chief librarian, who had tenure, from that position to another library position. But yet she said we couldn't move her from being the Armstrong Browning sole librarian to being a research librarian at Armstrong Browning Library.
Mr. Burr, you said that Ms. Coley's contract, Exhibit 4.
I said 4, but I was wrong. It's 3.
Okay, 3. Provides for no specific duties or responsibilities.
Yes.
McNamara says that by reference, it incorporates other letters and policy manuals and procedure manuals that do delineate specific duties and tasks for her position.
Yes. I stand by the record. The record in Exhibit 3 is the contract, It has no word in it about specific duties and responsibilities. It says that she's an assistant professor, and that's what her salary is, and she works for this year. It incorporates the academic, the BUPP, the Butler University Policies and Procedures. The three that she contended provided some right to her is the one on academic freedom. It relates to professors having academic freedom. It doesn't say what their job titles are. It applies across the university. The next one was a tenure policy statement. It provides policies and procedures by which you can terminate someone's tenure. It is a procedural right. It applies across the university. It doesn't say Betty Coley has a certain job description. Then the other one she said is one on dismissal. It's one that says what you have to do when you get dismissed.
Counsel, your time has
And I didn't get to answer your question.
All right.
I'm sorry.
The clause is submitted, and the court will now take a brief recess.
All right.